doesn't it? And before you know it, there's nobody there to iron your clothes. That was great. Thanks, guys. Casey said to me when I asked him to sing that song a couple weeks ago, "So you trying to turn me into a country western singer?" I think he's just natural. Very talented. The other day, you talk about not blinking, how fast life goes. Last Monday, we were at my house having dinner, eating steaks for my son's 21st birthday. 21. So we're sitting around the table with all my kids, which is kind of rare these days. And I'm getting kind of like some of you that know to get all your kids home. It's a little harder the older you get. It really is. And you know what I'm talking about, too. Those are great days to do that, and you really kind of grab onto them. So we're sitting around the table, and Andrew blows out his candles, 21 candles. My 7-year-old looks over at me, and she says, "Dad, you know, you could be a grandpa." Oh, I said, "Honey, what are you talking about?" She goes, "Yeah, Dad, Andrew's 21 now. You could be a grandpa." And I said, no, I don't think that's going to happen for quite some time. And the first person to call me grandpa is going to get it. Grandpa. Grandpa. I was just riding bulls in Wyoming. I am not a grandpa. I can't believe that could happen. Dan, I can't believe that could happen to me. Now, some of you, I'm okay with that. You know, it goes so fast, doesn't it? Today, I want to talk about just with life going so fast, what you pass on to your kids. What are you going to give to your children? That's hard. I wish I could just say, you know, for me, it's being a youth pastor. Because, you know, being a youth pastor is a whole lot easier. They're not my kids. When I did that for 20 years, it was great. Because I was their hero. And I could do no wrong. And the parents would call, "Oh, could you talk to my kids? They won't listen to me." I love that phone call. That's a very common phone call. And some of you know what I'm talking about. You've called me. Please talk to them. I know what you're talking about. See, but as the youth pastor, who do I call to talk to my kids? It's tough being a parent. It really is. I understand that. What will you pass on? I could pass on to other kids things that seems easier at times than I can to my own children. And then I'll get phone calls from parents, and they'll say, "I just wanted to tell you, your kids are the most well-mannered, well-behaved. They are gentlemen and ladies. Hello, who is this? Is this a prank phone call?" You ever get those, you know, where people do that to you? But you know, honestly, inside, you're just gloating over your kids, thinking, "Good, I did something right." Until your wife says, "No, you didn't. I did." It's true. I'm hearing people going, "Don't throw those elbows, ladies." It is true. It is true that God has made our wives to be maternal. You know, and what do you pass on? What makes a good life to pass on? I got to thinking about that. And then I thought, well, what makes a good movie a good movie? You know what makes a good movie and a good life good? Here's what it is. I've got the answer. What makes a blockbuster, or something that they're talking about in years to come? It's quotable. It's true. Quotable movies become great movies that are passed on. My kids will quote Tommy Boy till they're blue in the face. What's that one where they ride around on horses, but there's no horses, and they clack the coconuts instead? See, and you know, everybody's going, "Oh, that's Monty Python, you know, run away." They have all these quotes. I mean, I met a guy on an airplane that's become good friends of ours. They just adopted a little girl last year. They came up, met him on a vacation, and the first thing off the airplane when we said, "Okay, have a great vacation," which we ended up spending the whole week in Hawaii with, he goes to give me a hug, and he says, "Well, I went to shake his hand," and he goes, "Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers got a hug." And I said, "Tommy Boy." And he goes, "Yeah, Tommy Boy." I said, "My brother always does that." He goes, "Me too." I mean, great movies are great because they're quotable. People remember them. I mean, Gone with the Wind, quotable. Terminator. It doesn't even have to be a great movie. I'll be back, you know, and everybody knows that it's quotable. All these movies become quotable, so they become great movies and they're passed on and people remember them for generations. Parents and kids can quote the same movies because they remember them. And it's amazing because I think life is the same way. I mean, look at Rocky Balboa. I'm not sure that he's the greatest actor in the world, Sylvester Stallone. But everybody remembers, I mean, it's quotable, Rocky, all the Rocky movies. Adrian. I mean, he became great because he could, When I was in college, I had a lot of friends that did, I mean, it didn't make it quotable, but that movie's great because it's quotable. I got to thinking about what my mom and dad have said to me that are quotable. One of my mom's most quotable lines of being a great parent. She had a lot of great lines, but the one that stood out that I still don't understand is, always make sure you're wearing clean. It's quotable. And I'm thinking to myself, why is that so quotable? She said, because if you're ever in an accident. And I'm thinking, what difference does it make if I had clean underwear? But they pass it on. And you know what I tell my kids? The same stuff. We do. We pass on. My father had tons of quotable lines that I have passed on. In fact, I've used them recently. Stop crying or I'll... It's quotable. This hurts me more. That's right. There are so many quotable lines that we've passed on. You know, the Bible says that this morning, just to take a look at a couple things that make things quotable, to pass things on. It's a mother's nature to pass things on. And I want to give you just a few things, that just real quickly, a couple things. I don't have a whole lot, but I have three things. Mom, M-O-M. I have three things that help us to pass on. Before I die, I can think about mom that I want to pass on to my kids. The first one, the M, is memories. The O is oral traditions. And then the last M is in that is a message. I have a message for you. And I want to pass those three things on. In fact, that's what Moses writes here in Deuteronomy. He says in verse 3, you saw with your own eyes what the Lord did. You saw with your own eyes. You know what that is? That's memories. You saw it. You remember. I have a lot of memories that my mom passed on. You know what? We want to, in these memories, we want to preserve the present. That's what memories are, preserving the present. Cameras. I wish we had video cameras when I was a kid. I wish I had some of those tapes. Some of you may have that. But in today's world, you have those things. But we had cameras and we took pictures. And my mom was great at preserving the present to say, son, I want to give you memories in your life that are important. I want to give you things so you can look back and remember who you are. And so we have pictures. I have pictures of my grandparents. I have pictures of my parents. I have pictures of my great-grandparents, of my great-great-grandparents. It's great to preserve those times so that you can remember things in your life. In fact, my mom gave me some of those memories. I brought a couple of them with me. I mean, we take pictures of our kids with baseball gloves, hoping one day they'll hit it out of the park, but knowing it's just great to have a catch. And, you know, so we have memories. And then we have memories that our parents keep of us when we're 8 years old. And it just didn't seem that long ago. And now I got pictures of my kids in baseball uniforms. And so things go very fast. And my mom kept all these pictures that I didn't know about. And a few years ago, she pulled them all out. And she says, son, here, I want to give you the envelope of all the memories of all the pictures. And you know what that meant to me? It meant that my mom held on to things, that there were times in our lives that were so special that she wanted to capture those and she wanted to share those with me so that I could share them with my kids. You know why? She wants to pass that on. She wants to pass on who we were. But the only thing about pictures is we tend to forget, don't we? Pictures can only capture so much. They may be worth 1,000 words, but you know what I want? I want 10,000 words. And so we do that. And no wonder why Moses said, "You saw with your own eyes what the Lord did." You know what we have in our house? We have more than just pictures. We started something called a memory box years ago. And we have things that made it. And we have things that the kids got into that didn't quite make it. But we wanted to capture when it says here, "You saw what the Lord did." I want my kids to have memories of what the Lord did. We have an ultrasound of one of our kids. When the doctor said, "Not going to make it. If you have this baby, not going to make it. If she does make it, just know this. The mental retardation will be so great that she'll be in complete care without any thought or recognition of a normal life or anything. In fact, we want to encourage you to have an abortion." Well, that little 7-year-old girl told me the other day I could be a grandpa. And we have a picture which is representing more than 1,000 words. It represents my God. When she gets older, I could say, "Honey, here's a picture and a story that goes with it. I want you to remember, Daddy, what is this?" "Well, that's your ultrasound. And honey, they said that you weren't going to make it. And it would be a good idea for us. The best thing that we could do in life is to not go through this. But honey, we chose not to. And we asked God what we should do. And God says, I'm going to give this to you." We sang the song earlier today. "Blessed be your name. Though in the road marked with suffering, though there's pain in the offering, still blessed be your name." And I remember driving on a road, and I can tell her this one day. Honey, driving down the road, just saying, "God, what are you going to do? I'm not sure I can handle it." And he spoke to me in my car and said, in my spirit, he said, "Mitch, you can handle this when it comes. But trust me." And so in that, when he writes here, "You saw with your own eyes what the Lord did." I asked my wife, I said, "Do we still have it?" He got into a place. We have a pin. It was about 8 inches by 1/4 inch that went through one of my son's legs when he was almost in a full body cast for several weeks, or actually a few months. And I was on a mission trip and got the phone call, "Son, run over, in surgery, call home." That's all I had for hours upon hours. And in my spirit, I thought maybe I'd lost one of my kids. And I know many of you have lost children. And in that moment, you reach out and you hold on. You say, "God, give me something to hold on to." And I believe God gives us something. We had a little steel rod just to remind us and to speak that story to our kids in our memory box. I believe as a parent, we are to pass on the things of God to say, remember, and to take a snapshot. Now, this isn't a good picture. I don't know about you, but if Moses had a Polaroid, here's the picture. He says, "You saw with your own eyes what the Lord did at Baal, how God destroyed everyone who didn't listen to him. Hey, everybody who's dying, pose, you know, and there's the picture. Hey, remember, this isn't one of those snapshots you want to hold on to. Remember this." And everybody's going, "Oh, boy, do I remember that. Remember when they worship false gods? Remember when they turned their back on God? Remember when they cursed him?" Whew. Don't ever do that. Okay. They had a picture of that. Now, I don't take pictures of bad moments, although sometimes you may be in a hospital room and take a shot. We don't have a lot of those moments, but we do have memories that we want to hold on to. That he says, remember what you saw with your eyes. God wants us to take pictures. And you know what these pictures are? They're not pictures of just my kids. They're not just pictures of my family. They're pictures of the hand of God, when the hand of God moved in our lives. And I say as parents, grab a hold of those. Gather those things into your life and pass those on to your kids. That's the memories that God gives us. The second thing is the oral traditions. You know, you pass on oral traditions. He said in verse 8, "See, I have taught you my decrees and laws." Somebody said to me not long ago, "How do you know if the Bible's true? It's just a bunch of men who made it up." Do you know the Bible's accuracy is so, there's nothing that even compares. In history, we have a litmus test to figure out, it's called a literary test. How do I know if a book's any good? How do you know if a book's any good? Well, Homer's Iliad is the book that is the highest literary piece of work for this literary test to say it's accurate. It has about 400 documents validating its accuracy. And it was, and most of it's written 400 years after the fact of Homer. And we say that is 100%. Do you know the Bible has over 32,000 documents, well over that, but more than 32,000 documents supporting it, written in the lifetime of those who were there? And I was telling this guy, I said, its literary accuracy is so far off the charts beyond Homer's Iliad. If you say the Bible's not accurate, then you have to say that Homer and Shakespeare and all these other things, you might as well just throw them out, they're all lies. Because the Bible has all these documents. In fact, a little boy who was throwing some rocks in a cave one day in the 60s found a little document called the Dead Sea Scrolls. He took those writings of Isaiah and other Old Testament pieces, but Isaiah almost in its entirety, 99.99% accurate. It was a matter of punctuation. And thousands of years had passed, and they compared and said, see, this is going to prove that the Bible is written by men and passed down by oral tradition and written tradition, and it's just not going to last. And as they compared those two, they said, there's no work on earth that shows the accuracy of the Bible. It has to be off the charts. The reason I say that is we pass on oral traditions to our children. Are they accurate? When we tell our kids something, is it true? I hear a lot of things from folks that they pass on to their kids. And we have to be careful that we pass on good oral traditions. No wonder why he said, Moses said, I have taught you decrees and laws that God commanded so that you may follow them in the land you're entering. He's saying, look, I'm going to give you something good. Follow it. This is good advice. I know you guys probably give your kids good advice. I hope you give your kids good advice. Now they have the choice of looking at your advice and going, yeah, right. One day when they get older, like Mark Twain used to say, he said, I didn't realize how much my dad knew until I became a dad. That's true. I can't wait till all my kids get to that place where they'll come back and they'll all say, Dad, you might have known something. That day's coming, guys. Hopefully. But in the oral tradition, we pass those on. I got to thinking about the things that were passed on to me. This is to promote our pilgrimage. What are the things that our parents passed on to us? What are some of the things your parents handed you? I think about just a couple of things. My mom handed me honor. She taught me about honor, and we've taught that to our kids. You heard my wife say something about that today, especially to our boys in the honor towards girls. We tried to do that. My mom used to always tell me, don't hit a girl. I think that's honorable. I think that's good advice. I think that's a great oral tradition. You are not to harm. You're supposed to. God made you strong. Protect girls. And I used to think, because the reason she said that, I had this girl, Kelly Mortensen, that lived up the street from me. And she had two older sisters. She was my age, but she had two older sisters. And some of you have heard the story about the Waffle Stompers. Now, her sister used to threaten my life with her boots, called Waffle Stompers. But Kelly used to start all the time. She would hit me all the time. I would go home and tell my mom, Kelly has hit me with her jump rope. Mom, I'm going to beat her up. You know, as a little boy. And my mom would pass on the oral tradition. Men never, ever, ever, ever have the excuse to ever hit a girl. Ever. I said, but she keeps hitting me. And my mom passed on the tradition and the reason why. She said, because girls hit boys because they like you. And I said, this girl must love me deeply. She hit me all the time. And I never hit her. I did. I learned honor, so I got my sister to beat her up. That's not true. Another thing my mom taught me, and my dad especially, they handed on, was respect. I hope you teach respect. These are just a few things. I learned respect. When I was younger, I didn't have a lot of respect for certain things. I got into some things I shouldn't have got into. And one night, doing some foolish things, me and some friends decided to go around town and steal every single American flag that was in town. The VA hospital or area, retirement home, people's personal. We stole 8 flags. And I decided they would make great doors in my bedroom. And put a couple of pins through them and had them hanging there. Somebody had seen my car at 3 in the morning at a retirement center. One of the retirees couldn't sleep at night and saw it and described it to the sheriff, who happened to be my uncle. I learned respect because he said, "We're not going to press charges. Everybody wants their flags back. But there is one gentleman at a house. He's a single gentleman. His wife is long past. But he would like to sit down and have you talk to him, and he wants you to apologize." And I thought, okay, how hard can that be? I went into his house. I remember walking into this old Victorian home, and this gentleman, who is probably in his 60s at that time, this was well over 20 years ago, and he sat down with me and began to describe to me that what that flag meant to him when he fought in World War II. And he talked about the friends who had died fighting for that freedom. He wasn't angry with me. He just wanted me to understand his life and what that flag meant to him. I have a deep, deep respect for the men and women who serve. I have a deep respect for honor and respect in our country and for the flag. I have a deep respect for what that symbolizes. And I know there's freedoms in the world to do things to flags and people do that. But, you know, for me, orally, it was passed down in an oral tradition. And that's a part of my life, and I pass that on to my children, and I hope they pass that on to their children. Just real quickly, another thing I learned was forgiveness. I had a friend who lived across the street. I met him when I was 5 years old, and he was 4. We fought almost daily. And I learned what was passed on to me was a word called forgiveness. Because after one of us would end up with a bloody nose, it was inevitable knocking on a door, either of us, and it was always the same from Mom. "You boys shake hands or kiss and make up." We'd look at each other, put our hands out and shake, and we were out in the sandbox or on the swing set playing again as best friends. Years went by, and at the age of 16, we adopted him. He is legally my brother. He lives in California, and we have a relationship because we've learned forgiveness in our lives. And you know, I learned real quick, it is good to kiss and make up. And I've learned it is good to shake hands and make up. But I've learned that it's important as soon as something happens to go and to make up. That is important in life. That's a good thing to pass on to our children. Forgiveness. Don't hold on to stuff. It'll eat you alive. And finally, I learned honesty. My mom always told me if something goes wrong, and I learned this from my mom early on, is if you make a mistake, fix the mistake. And I make a lot of mistakes. You ever make mistakes? I make mistakes constantly. Have you ever been on your knees before your kids and asking for their forgiveness? That's humbling. But I learned that early on, and I hope I can teach that to my children. They'll learn, Dad's not perfect, Mom's not perfect, but you know what we are? We are people who believe in forgiveness, and we're people who believe in honesty. And if we mess up, we will come to you and tell you that we've messed up. I have done things in my life where I've had to sit down and get down on my knees with my kids and say, "Dad, sorry, I didn't understand the whole situation, or maybe I misspoke," and to do that. 2 weeks ago, I shared a story with you guys about Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, the guy who saved the guy, Mr. Fleming, who invented penicillin. That's all true. What wasn't true, and this story I got out of a book from 1958, a book that was written about this story. It's not true. Somebody sent me a thing and said, "You know, check this out. Do some research on Snopes.com. I did some research. And I said, "Well, this can't be right because I got it out of a book in the 50s. And this guy quoted stuff out of the 60s. So I called up out in the East the museum for Winston Churchill. I wanted just to talk to the curator. I wanted to find out the truth because my mom taught me that honesty is important, and I wanted to find out what the honest truth was. And basically the story is this. They both were told the story about each other and said, "That's a really cute story, but it never happened. He never saved my life, and I never did that, and my dad did not pay for his education." That is not a true story. How easy it is for things to creep in orally in tradition and not be true. So I am sorry I passed on a story about Churchill and the other gentleman, Fleming, and it wasn't true. So I'm making that right. So if you're listening online or now that you're in the audience, I was wrong, and I'm sorry. Honesty is important in life. Have I had to do this before? My first church, I sent out a letter, and it was the most humbling thing because I said, "What are you doing just hanging around?" and I had a picture of an old western town out in the middle of a bunch of sagebrush and a guy hanging. I said, stop hanging around. Come join our new youth group right out of college. Two people in the area had hung themselves that week. I got letters back in my mailbox, crumpled up with nice notes. Not so nice notes. I asked the pastor for 5 minutes in the church, and I got up before the church. I said, I'm so sorry. It was not meant for death. I'm about life, and I apologize if this came across the wrong way. I thought I was going to get fired. I didn't know what would happen. But I learned early on from my mom, it's better to be honest than to get a paycheck. It's better to be honest than have a few friends scratch your ear. It's better to be honest than try to get an election. It's better to be honest than to worry about what other people think about you. It's better to be honest. And I want to pass that on to my children. So I stood before the congregation. I apologized. And just with everything in me, I was so embarrassed. I'd never been that embarrassed in my life. And the congregation stood and they applauded and they said, thank you for being honest. It probably took a lot to say that. And it did. It took a lot to say that. And at that point, I learned a valuable lesson. My mom was right. Honesty is the best policy. Great, great oral tradition. Pass those things on. And finally, the message. In verse 9, only be careful and watch yourself closely so you do not forget the things your eyes have seen. Don't let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Kids, if I could say to you what your parents have taught you, don't let it slip from you as long as you live. There'll be a day when you'll sit back and you'll go, you know, Mom and Dad said this. There may be a day that comes that you say, I wish I had Mom and Dad around to say something to me. Those days come. I don't care how old you are. You still probably want your mom and dad around. There are times when I'm sure you would like to make a phone call, some of you, and say, I wonder what Dad would think about this. You know, there's coming a day, folks, when we're not going to be there for maybe their children or their children's children. So the message is this. No wonder why he said, teach them to your children. How about a message in a bottle? How about we just stick a message in a bottle? Do you know in 1939 at the World Fair in New York that they decided to come up with a time capsule? That was the first time a time capsule happened. I was just doing some research. They put together this time capsule for 50 centuries, 5,000 years. And they buried it at the 1939 World Fair. We won't be there when they open it in 5,000 years. Well, less than 5,000 now. Time's just flying. Do you know what they put in that time capsule? What they wanted people in 5,000 years to know about 1939? Back then, here's what some of the, I couldn't print how many pages of stuff they put in this time capsule. But here are just a couple of things. Contributing to convenience, comfort, health, and safety, they put an alarm clock, a can opener, eyeglasses. This is what they put in. This is what they wanted people in 5,000 years to know. Maybe we won't have eyeglasses. I don't know. Safety pin, silverware, knife, fork, spoon, toothbrush, transmitters, receiver of ordinary handset, telephone, a watch, boys' toys, a mechanical spring-propelled automobile, girls' toy, a small doll, a Mickey Mouse child cup. You know, in 5,000 years, could you imagine Mickey Mouse still being around? I don't know. A set of alphabet blocks, container of tobacco, electric razor, safety razor, smoking pipe, baseball, deck of cards, a golf ball, a golf tee, poker chips, wheat, corn, oats, tobacco, cotton, flax, rice, an essay in microfilm comprising books, speeches, excerpts of books and encyclopedias, 22,000 pages containing 10 million words about 1939. Here's a couple other things. Newsweek, Time Magazine, Reader's Digest of those days, Little Orphan Annie, Dick Tracy, Disney's Mother Pluto and Mickey Mouse, Gone with the Wind. They put in a couple movie clips, a poker scene, a typical golf match. They actually put these movies in there. Scenes from a football game, Yale and Harvard, and scenes from a baseball game, the World Series. They put in there our religious and philosophies of Earth. It features its features and peoples, women's styles, how we appear, talk, and act. Scenes of our day, the Encyclopedia Britannica, a newsreel of 15 minutes, Howard Hughes, Jesse Owens, different things about them. Baseball, big league all-star game. And they put in there anything that they could think of so that people in 5,000 years would have something. Have you got a time capsule? I have a time capsule. His name is Andrew. I have a time capsule. His name is Robbie, Spencer, Jackie. I have a time capsule, Abigail. They're time capsules. You know what they're doing? They're taking a message to a generation I may never see. They will. They'll take a message. Those kids will take a message. And they may sit down one day and say to them, Grandpa and Grandma, what was great Grandpa and Grandma like? Oh, they were weird. They would leave their entire livelihood and their family to start churches. They did stuff. What are they going to say about us? What will they teach them? What message do you have? Do you have a message in a bottle? Wouldn't you love to take a message and stick it in a bottle and say, I have a message for, where are my kids at? Point to them. There they are. There's one. Yeah, don't embarrass them. I have a message that I want you to take. I have a message. What message do you have? No wonder why Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 3, but you yourselves are our letters written on your hearts. What letter will I send to the next generation? Here's the letter I want to send. There's hope. Don't ever give up. There's hope. No matter what you go through, there's hope. Never, ever give up. There's more in life than life offers. That Jesus Christ said there's so much more. Don't ever give up. If I could take a bottle and stick a message in it and throw it out in the ocean and hope somebody finds it, what are the odds of something like that happening? Well, you get a chance, go have some fun, because I found a bunch, and this is actually a true story as I close. Not a lot of message in a bottle stories come from central Wisconsin. This is dairy country, mainly because there's not a lot of ocean there. But one bottle recently surfaced on a lake, and CBS News correspondent Steve Hartman did the report. A kid named Steve Lydell found a bottle last April, and 6 months later, people are still talking about the discovery. Here's what he wrote. The note was kind of ho-hum. This note's nothing great, but here's what he wrote. As a little kid, he wrote this. My name is Josh Baker. I'm 10. If you find this, put it on the news. That's it. That's what he wrote. The date, April 16th, 1995. And he tossed it in the lake. That was all he wrote, but it was enough. Josh Baker, everyone knows that name, says Lydell. He's like the town hero. Josh Baker grew up in White Lake, Wisconsin. He was a precious kid, and his curiosity got him into a lot of mischief, though his warm smile got him out of most of it. The day he wrote that note, for example, his mom, Maggie, still remembers exactly where he got the bottle from. Quote, I came in one day and the whole house smelled like vanilla. 10-year-old Josh threw the vanilla bottle with the note into White Lake, and the years passed. By 18, Josh was a U.S. Marine. By 19, he was fighting door-to-door in Fallujah. While in Iraq, Josh got lots of support from his hometown. Georgia Heisted, the school secretary, was one of many people who would put together care packages for him. I don't have a son, I only have a daughter, she said, but I'll tell you, he would be my model son. That's why everybody says the day Josh Baker finally came home was one of the happiest days ever, and one of the saddest days ever was when, just a few months later, he died in a car crash. Josh's funeral came and went, but the depression had sunk in. His mom gave up on life. That's when the bottle surfaced. He wanted us to find this, his friend said. He probably thought that was awesome. It's just like what Josh would do. Most everyone was convinced it was a sign, especially Josh's mom, who had basically shut out the world. When that message came, she said, and I don't care how hokey it sounds, this is the truth. That was Josh just saying, Mom, snap out of it. I'm okay. A 10-year-old boy tossing a message into a lake that his mom would get right when she needed it. Jesus Christ tossing a word out to us. to a generation that would never see the cross, would never see the disciples. You wouldn't see Lazarus walk out of a dead tomb alive. You would not see a girl rise up named Tabitha out of her dead bed and her dad, a centurion Roman soldier. And Jesus said here, and he puts a message in a Bible, not in a bottle. And he says, to generations to come, I have a message for you. I love you. Would you tell people, I love you? How hard is that message? I love you. And may my children tell their children, I love you. And may their children say the same message, I love you. Moms, thank you. Thank you for the memories. Thank you for the oral tradition. But thank you for the message of love. Because that's what mom spells. If you turn it upside down, it does say, wow. It really does. I have a challenge for you, moms. We went out, and instead of giving you flowers today, which we did last year, I thought that would be nice. And you know, God really just kind of grabbed a hold of my heart and said, do something different. Would you go out? And since we're talking about pastors and passing on, so all of you moms, I have my ushers ready. I want to give you a gift. It's a journal. It's not a huge journal. It's just a journal, like what we passed out. Maybe not quite that fancy for our lucky winners. But it's a journal that I would like you to take and write down things that you'd like to pass on. Because there may be a day when you won't get that opportunity to pass those things on. And I'd like you to journal and just say, here's what I want my kids to know about me. Here's what I'd like them to know about our family. And here's some good advice. So, ushers, if you would, I'm going to pray for you in just a second. But would you raise your hands, moms? Our ushers are coming. Moms, I'd like to give you guys each one of these journals. So just start passing those out. And they're going to bring those around, moms. Thanks, guys. If you'll just kind of up and help. Maybe somebody can give him a hand on this side. Thanks, Bill. Come right on up this row right here. And take these and use these to pass along. Are we good? A couple more over here. There you go. Right back over here, Ron, if you'll come around this side, right around the front this side. Oh, right there. There you go. Did we get everybody? I want to pray for you, and I want this to be our benediction. Are we good? Thank you, guys. Here's our benediction this morning. And this is for all of you moms who stayed up late at night with sick toddlers in their arms, wiping the barf laced with Oscar Mayer wieners and cherry Kool-Aid, saying, it's okay, honey, mommy's here. Who walk around the house all night with their babies when they keep crying and won't stop. This is for all the mothers who show up at work with spit in their hair and milk stains on their blouses and diapers in their purse. For all the mothers who carpool and make cookies and sew Halloween costumes, and all the mothers who don't. This is for the mothers who gave birth to babies they'll never see, and the mothers who took those babies and gave them homes. This is for all the mothers who froze their buns off on metal bleachers at football or soccer games Friday night or down at the AYSO fields, instead of watching from cars so that their kids ask, did you see me? They could say, of course, I wouldn't have missed it for the world and meant it. This is for all the mothers who yell at their kids in the grocery store and swat them in despair when they stomp like their feet like a tired 2-year-old who wants ice cream before dinner. This is for all the mothers who sat down with their children and explained all about making babies. And for all the mothers who wanted to but just couldn't. For all the mothers who read Goodnight Moon twice a night for a year and then read it again just one more time. This is for all the mothers who taught their children to tie their shoelaces before they started school, and for all the mothers who opted for Velcro instead. This is for all the mothers who teach their sons to cook and their daughters to sink a jump shot. This is for all the mothers whose heads turn automatically when a little voice calls, Mom, in a crowd, even though they know their own offsprings are at home. This is for all the mothers who sent their kids to school with stomach aches, assured them they'd be just fine once they got there, only to get a call from the school nurse an hour later asking them to please pick them up right away. This is for all the mothers whose children have gone astray, who can't find. For all those children who've gone astray, who can't find the words to reach them. For all the mothers who bite their lips, sometimes until they bleed, when their 14-year-old dyed their hair green. What makes a good mother? Is it patience, compassion, broad hips, the ability to nurse a baby, cook dinner, sew buttons on a shirt all at the same time? Or is it the heart? It is the ache you feel, ladies, when you watch your son or daughter disappear down the street, walking to school alone for the very first time. It's that jolt that takes you from asleep to dread, from bed to crib at 2 a.m. to put your hand on the back of a sleeping baby. The need to flee from wherever you are and hug your child when you hear the news of a fire, a car accident, or a child dying. This is for all the mothers who put pinwheels and teddy bears on their children's graves. This is for the young mothers stumbling through diaper changes and sleep deprivation, and mature mothers learning to let go. For working mothers and stay-at-home mothers, single mothers and married mothers, mothers with money and mothers without, this is for all of you. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you. We love you, Mom. Let's stand together. God, may that be our benediction, to know that we are so appreciative that you didn't make man alone, but you made woman. You made moms.